Mr. Sherwood, Real 2. We were talking about your time living in Hackney and just generally about your youth and later. What about the question of the degree of Jewish religious orthodoxy in your family and the level of religious and cultural observance of Jewish customs in the family? Sure. How would you say it was?
I would say that by today's standards, we would be considered very orthodox. By the standards then, it was just normal. I recall a number of things, particularly Shabbat. Shabbat was kept very, very strongly. And I do recall, and somehow with a nice feeling in the way of whatever, that towards sunset on Friday, which is when we started, so it was the eve of the Sabbath, the piano would be closed and locked. All our money would come out of our pockets, be put on a tray somewhere safe. No pencils or paper or writing or tearing of paper. No for games except our father's protest. That was the only game that was permitted. Peaceful quiet descended on the house. My parents, my father, not my mother, when they went ashore, very rarely went to sleep up. My father would go, and often go with him on the Friday evenings, often he went on his own, Saturday mornings we'd all go together. And it was a certain ritual. We would have the evening meal together, and at the end of the meal, I always trooped over to a friend of mine named Gideon Young, and a friend named Rudin, the Yanishevsky, a Russian name, and I'd go there just as they were finishing their meal, they'd be saying their prayers, saying with it, singing the same sort of medals, sort of thing, and then we would walk around the house in the same route, pick up somebody on the way, and talk all about politics or whatever. The family was quite orthodox that way. Saturday itself also was the same thing. On the morning we'd all go to the synagogue. No playing of games, no noise, no noisy. I don't know if the radio went on, no television, of course. Quite likely we had no radio. It must have had quite an effect on me because I am still, I always say, shocked. But when Good Friday comes along, you wouldn't know it's Good Friday. You listen to radio or television. In those days, on Good Friday, the sacred religious music would come across. No shops would be open, except the shop that made hot cross buns. You'd have in the morning, otherwise it'd all be closed. And I often look back thinking, that was rather nice. And sometimes I've often said that now we're lucky we have 2 days. That one day, not necessarily from a religious point of view, but to separate it from the rest of the week by a different way, a bit more peaceful and quiet, reading, and that sort of thing, discussing with friends. I don't mean where it was in the old days, not carrying any money, not riding. You'd never think of riding on going on a bus or anything, or going in a car that day. In fact, I remember somebody who, a cousin of mine, who's come and played chess with our father Saturday afternoon. And it would be time to come along, walk our place, watching them playing chess. I never took up chess myself, but I loved watching them. And later they'd say the evening prayers. My father would give him some money to pay for the bus fare. Things like that stuck in my mind. They still do. And I still, on Friday evening, look towards sunset, I'm aware. Don't go to cinema that much, but sometimes we do. Then Friday evening, I must prefer to go on Friday evening than Saturday because there's that division between the working week and the weekend. So I'd say that by today's standard, the family were quite orthodox. I remember a problem I had. It's just a crucifix to a Jew has a much greater effect than, say, Star David to an angel. Significance for Star David, just like crescents and Star of Islam and so on, no particular importance. But the cross, crucifix, the crusades, symbolism be aware of all the cruelties and things that have occurred, and in hoc signo domina, and assign the number of cruelties that occurred in all of us. And so much so that I remember in the back of our garden in Hackney, there was a shed, and they had four windows, glass windows. And for some reason or other, we've broken the glass. And it left a cross. And I thought, it can't be a cross. It can't be that. So we broke a cross. The wooden cross. And I remember afterwards my father saying to my mother, but not only broke the glass, but then they broke the wooden frame. So why? And I was thinking, doesn't he understand why? Sort of thing. But then again, later, somewhat later occasion when television would come in and all that, my father was watching television once, and there was some, in those days, focusing wasn't bad and good, and there was the end of a service or something, you had a crucifix on the screen. And there was a sharp, you could because of that, and I remember my father leaning over and focusing on the sharp edge of the crucifix. And I remember thinking, my, to change, but it doesn't have that effect on him anymore. So, there's that. But as far as religion is concerned, yes, we get the festivals, the main holidays, we stay away from school. In those days, there was, I'd say, about a quarter of the children in school were Jewish, so the school was quite used and made allowances for it. The festivals, we kept really fast in Yom Kippur, with the intense. My father was there and said about the whole 24 hours, and he would not even come home at night, stay all night there. And we used to, if you got the afternoon, said to the other, now let me see your tongue, because we had the idea that with the tongue you could tell whether you'd eaten or drunk anything, the colour of it or whatever, kind of that. And it was always a question of fasting. Seder, the place of the Passover, was very intense, and that's when the whole family would gather, my father did, of course. I now still do. We still have Passover Seder, until my wife was ill, we used to have all of the, because they used to have two nights during the diaspora, there were two nights, you said, so in Israel, there's only one. Theory being that you can't really know that when sunset has started, just make sure you have the 2 days, so make sure that you start all the right time. But things eased up.
Well, so you'd follow the diet, obviously, and
So even outside, I kept the dietary laws until the army.
I'm going to come to that, so that's the point.
Yes, we did, and all the boys, but we wouldn't, in the course of eating bacon outside. But then again, we didn't eat too much in restaurants outside, we basically couldn't afford it. See, some of the friends were quite poor. A friend I mentioned, that was down from his father died when the wife was pregnant with his younger brother, so about 8 children. The mother kept, they also had a grocery shop, brought them all up, like that. But the amount of spending money that he would have and the others would have was minimal. And what we used to do was pool whatever money we had. So whenever there was so much, like 3 months or something, well, we did that, we go out west. And we'd get a bus to go to the West End and whatever it did and so on. We used to do that, but of course, basically, we tailored things to what the poorest person could do. And really friendly, I don't recall any jealousy. The house I lived in was better than any of the others. My father had a car and that sort of thing, but I don't recall any feeling jealousy. One person, I think, had a bit of a chip on his shoulder and felt that they all could have been lucky, but then his background found it a bit difficult. So,
now, what about the outbreak of war? What do you remember of that day, if anything?
Yes, I remember quite a bit. It was 3rd of September. there'd been talk of war, was going to happen in Poland and so on. And a day or two before the war that broke out, the family of my mother and the younger children, including me, moved to Welshpool, Wales.
On holiday?
No, to get away. It was only part of the evacuation plan. We stayed at Jordan Dragon, I think, or World Park was, whatever. But for some reason, and I can't really recall why, I think the 3rd of September was a Sunday, I think. For some reason or other, another brother of mine, who my brother ordered, came back to London by train. I can't quite figure out why we did, but we did. It was a day we broke up, and as we were coming towards London, we'll see all the balloons and all that sort of thing. The house we had in Hackney had been reinforced. My father had done that. He was quite a handyman. One of the rooms had turned into a shelter. We didn't have sandbags outside, but it was seven basements and so on. I certainly recall the day that war broke out. And came back and stayed in the shelter. Other members of the family came and were staying also in the shelter. And I remember we had gas masks then. I spent a couple of days previously at Hackney Town Hall putting gas masks into boxes and all that sort of thing. Job then, and they were being distributed.
So you came back to London. You didn't stay in Welshpool.
No. I didn't go back to London, yes. Can't figure out quite why I did, but I did. Because I was at college, and college was the autumn term was about to start. But college was evacuated, Kings evacuated to Bristol. So my third year was spent in Bristol.
Right, we'll sort that out. Yes. So, how did you feel when war broke out?
I don't recall particularly feeling anything special. I don't recall thinking, the enormity of this world will never be the same again, or anything like that. Just took it in one stride. We were aware that, how to put it, that it was, the war was for a good reason. We knew what the Germans had been up to, and how successful they'd been so far, the cruelties and so on. So we felt it was the right thing. And I remember the comment, I think it was Chamberlain who said it, it is the evil things we are fighting against. And that phrase stuck in my mind. And we thought, yes, it's the evil things we are fighting against. And my father, not only a militarist, but he was quite passionate. I remember he was making a couple of speeches in the synagogue and saying, right now, children, younger people of that age, head to the army, join them, fight and so on. I remember also one of my brothers thought it was wrong for him to say that, because they thought that was being too militarist.
How did you feel about your own position? Because you were about 19, and ripe age to be either conscripted or whatever.
Yeah.
And
no bad feelings at all, in fact. Because at the beginning of October, we went up to Bristol, and for the day after also getting there, we all trooped over and volunteered. I speak to a group of friends who went and volunteered.
So, the college...
The college was evacuated, King's College was evacuated, and became part of Bristol University. The King's College were spread in various halls of residence. I went to one called Mortimer House, which had, I think, at one time been nursing home, maybe, whatever. That's where I spent the whole
and
year.
And you started there, that would be October, would it?
October 39, yes.
Now, the college, what about this volunteering? What exactly happened when you went to volunteer?
Well,
where did you go and what happened?
I was sharing a room with somebody who had... was being accused in London, but I was a Dane. pupil, as most of us were, I can't remember precisely how or why, but somehow seemed an automatic thing to do. And I think half a dozen of us, whatever, trooped over to the recruiting centre and volunteered.
And what exactly happened when you
I
got there?
I got a silver plate, signed a form, and I received a shilling. The King's shilling. Well, the King's shilling. And, I explained that studying, and I knew that, so I was put it allowed a 48-hour notice. I had to give myself a 48-hour notice, but I would go back and carry on studying. My mother did not know I had volunteered. Apparently, I didn't say this, but she learned from somebody else. And I think she was curious, because there were five boys. We all went to the army, and I was going ahead of it. When I embarked for overseas, my brother had been reported missing. And somebody didn't know whether he was still alive or dead. So my mother had a rather tough time.
Were you aware of the stress of that on your parents at the time?
I don't think so. I don't recall any. No, I didn't tell my mother. Presumably, I didn't tell her. I think my father perhaps knew, but I think that my mother was also knew that it was first her. I'm rationalising now. I don't recall actively saying, "Oh, I mustn't tell anybody."
What about your dad? How did he react?
I don't recall any of our reaction, but I know that he would have approved. He would be sorry. And I know when I was going abroad, at the time when we still didn't know what happened to my other brother, he wrote or something saying, "Well, does he have to go abroad? We don't know what brother already may have been killed."
We'll come on to that, I think. So, what about life at King's College, relocated to Bristol? What was it like
in Bristol or in London?
I think now in Bristol. What were your studies like there? I mean, what was life like?
When I look back, I think it's about the best year of my life. First year of independence, being away from home. It was a complete eye-opener to me. I was responsible much more for myself. I shared a room with a fellow who was the son of a vicar of BB, Leicestershire, in the BB. And we had somehow got a motorcycle, for 500cc naught, that we taught ourselves to drive. I'd learned to drive before, and we used to, the procedure, particularly during the course of summer, was to get up early, work, study for a couple of hours, get on the motorcycle, go down to Western Super Mare, and spend the day there, and drive back, and carry on working in the evening. That was the procedure. Incidentally, he drove home on the bike and was killed. That was when he finished. Of course, he also had a terrible, was very unhappy because his girlfriend, he received in the post a notification from the Catholic newspaper that he was in the centre reporting the engagement of his girlfriend to somebody else. And that really shook him hard. He was a very sensitive fellow. I got a photograph on of us studying. Very nice fellow indeed. We got along very well. We used to, it's petrol was actually, of course. So we used to rub the motorbike on kerosene, which you could buy. But we couldn't start the motorcycle this long time, so we had a small bottle of petrol. We used to soak rag in the petrol, put it in a car with the air intake or whatever, get it started, and then just run on the paraffin, which was illegal. And we used to have lots of smoke coming by, but we never had any problems with people. It was eye-opener in several ways. The studies went quite okay, quite well.
Still doing the law, obviously.
Yes, indeed. And a beautiful building, a lovely building, still there. never get a chance to ever have a look at it. And, but there was another way. Although I'd had girlfriends before, I had quite a few girlfriends, but it was a bit of an eye-opener, because I was then 19, yes, 19. I think back now to things I remember older women saying to me, that I didn't want to twerk because I didn't realize what they were getting. Now, I think back to that memory of not being there, I think that I suppose I was stupid and just not realizing what they were saying. But it also was my first introduction to Rosa. It wasn't the first introduction to sex, so it was quite good, that big book. But I was popular. I was running two or three girlfriends at the same time. Oh, yes. And we did that in those days. Now, I think, if I only know a girl, just one boyfriend or so, one friend, like that. But in those days, you used to run for the army, for the war. You know, be friendly with you. Two or three girls perhaps at the same time. And I thought we lived the Mortimer House in New Clifton. We spent a lot of money in Clifton Downs and nearly. We ran rags and put on a review where I played the part of Stalin because I had a moustache and hair done in great. I could probably have some. Russian basic appearance or whatever, and the Christmas value in the newspaper, I still got one of the topics, photographs of that. So I had a very good year at this. I took my final exam just at the time of Dunkirk, and I remember thinking at the time, because the new Dunkirk, the Germans were just about 20 miles across the channel, and I recall doing after essays or writing out where I would be answering questions on law and jurisprudence, the relationship between justice and law and all that. And we couldn't hear the guns, but they were not very far away. And I remember at the time thinking, that's a bit incongruous, and I was wondering what's going to happen. But I don't recall shaking or being fearful or frightened. In fact, I can't remember many occasions being actually frightened. I was scared. Apparently I was scared, but I wasn't actually frightened. Even during the time in the desert, we were retreating and trying to think of the tricky. That was some of that.
Now, so how did you do in your examinations?
Well, I wasn't the best of pupils. Well, I got through. In fact, I was one of the few people who, after the war, was able to see my actual papers in the marking. So why that happened. I got through, but I think the honours in one aspect of it, which he was, but I got through. So I got my law degree at the New York Summer, and we were told when we were in Bristol, just after the exam, to get out of Bristol, in effect. Well, all of that did get because the bombing started very soon after. Looking back, it's probably because of Enigma that we knew what the German plans were. And Bristol also has a big aircraft factory, And also, same thing, the library from King's London was removed to Bristol. The library in Bristol was bombed and badly damaged. The library in London wasn't touched.
So what did you do then when you were told to leave Bristol?
We were told we came back to London. My family had moved. They come back to London with the general thing during the Foley War. But then again, when the bomb started, they went out to Baldock in Hertfordshire, which is about 30 miles north of London. Delightful village, where it's a town now. They had a house there. And the house in London is still there with the protected room that had been converted, and generally speaking, whenever on leave or whatever, we come right back to London, stay there, or make our way back to Walbrook with the family.
What were you doing that summer?
That summer, yeah. My father, as I said, had a smoked salmon business, and they supply not only grocery shops, but it also hotels in London. And many of the main big hotels were supplied, and short of the manpower. And I spent a couple of months from the June, July, whatever, up to about September, I think I went to the Court of Colours, driving the van and delivering smoked salmon to the various hotels. And I used to, I got to know the West End of London particularly well, particularly, especially, the way to get to the tradesmen's entrance of the hotels. And later in life, in my commercial activities, I used to go to these hotels and put away the going room front entrance with people. And I used to think back about what previously happened in the tradesmen's entrance. I enjoyed that quite a bit. I enjoyed it. I got to know London very, very well. And still, we were amazed how well I know the back streets in London, because obviously it hasn't changed a bit for one of these and so on. So that was very, very good. But then I was, and let's say, you spend time in London, the bombing just about started at that time.
What do you recollect of the bombing?
Oh, yes, I recollect quite a bit. Particularly, it didn't stop us doing anything. We used to go, if I girlfriend, we'd go to London, it was stopped for a while, and then it started again. And there was a particular place, the Lion's Corner House at Marble Arch, what the old London Hotel is now. They had a brasserie, there were several living down just below ground level. And it was completely easy to say, or whatever it is. And it was very popular. And we used to go there and spend the evenings dancing, and there was a little water. So it was very enjoyable. Also, the father of a friend of mine played in the band. He was a cellist and played in the band. His son actually became quite a concert pianist. And then he went to America and became a composer and so on, but died. And I remember when coming home, sometimes I had a car, and I think I had two boys, had a car. And driving through the streets, houses of the way, and fire engines and all the pipes and all that sort of thing, and then going back into the house. The house itself wasn't damaged. You know,
this is your cousin who we've also interviewed.
Yes.
She wasn't Mitchell then, but
no,
yeah.
Her family had a terrible tragedy in the Korean War, and you quite likely have seen pictures of a bus that was thrown right against the building, the Mornington Crescent. It's a very famous one. You'll often see it in books describing the war in London, and the father, brother, sister were killed. Very, very sad. But we all carried on, and every now and then I remember my father was saying, but I wouldn't take them so between the bombing or whatever. That went on till September. September, I think.
September.
When I was called to the colours.
What was the call-up procedure?
That's called a letter saying you report to Blackdown in Hampshire. That's the first assembly places.
Now, do you know the it was just Blackdown Camp, was
Blackdown
it?
Blackdown Camp, and we call it as Blackdown. It must have had a name, but that's what it was.
Do you know which regiment was running the camp?
Well, it wasn't really a regiment, it was an intake place where for people who were going to be in infantry or army as opposed to Navy or Air Force. But that's what you were going to be doing in the army, as it hadn't yet been settled. Incidentally, if I can back up a little bit, this is rather important. Some of us were volunteers in Trevor,